Thank you. You're listening to WKCR FM New York and WKCR HD1. I'm here with Jerry Hemingway on Jazz Profiles. He's here in preparation for his upcoming residency at the Stone this week. That last tune we were just talking about was experimenting with some ideas about multiple tempi at once. Perhaps you'd like to talk about that a little?
Yeah, among other things that I was interested in as a composer and organizer of music and improvisation was the concept that bands, or the structure of this band in particular, having a cello and a bass, both being able to function as rhythm section players. I'm using that in the colloquial term, which means that they could both be walking bass players. And two horns in this case. I organized in the middle of the piece. You may notice that the drummer, I'm switching between two different speeds that are interrelated. They're tied together by, in musical terms, it's a dotted quarter note that ties these things together. But regardless, what we're hearing are two speeds at the same time. So the baritone saxophonist and the cellist, David Mott and Ernst Reisinger, are going at one speed, the faster speed, and then Mark Elias and Ray Anderson are going at another speed. That's the bass and the trombone. And it's all happening simultaneously. The other thing that was being explored in my quintet music from a very early stage, including this recording, was the concept of collective improvisation and collective playing in general. That is, that I organized the composition and the setups for the improvisation where everybody was playing a good deal of the time. And for me, the model for this was actually from very older forms, like, for instance, New Orleans traditions where polyphony and various things, where the whole band is often playing at the same time. And I liked the multiplicity of layers and the multiplicity of thinking that went on with this kind of musical construction. And both from an improvisational point of view, from an orchestrational point of view, and I would refine this with the quintet over and over again. I would over the years, as I went further and more deeply into this formation of five players, I found many different ways to explore lots of different themes, such as multiple tempos, such as multiple tonalities, and things of this nature, and lots of different things. Indeed. And we will shortly return to the quintet once more. But as we are in the exploring my chronology from the 1970s on up till now, at this point we're in the 1990s. And perhaps one of the more groups that we haven't really brought into the equation so far that should be discussed and is, of course, very important to me is the work of Anthony Braxton and his quartet. And Anthony, I met partly on account of the previously mentioned Wadada Leo Smith. Anthony and Wadada are dear friends from the Chicago days, and they played together as well, as I mentioned, in Paris. And when they returned to the States, they went to two different locations. Anthony lived in upstate New York, and Leo in the area that I'm from. And so from time to time, Anthony would come down to visit, and I would meet him, and that's my first meetings with him. And also, I started to play with him in these sort of informal rehearsal-type situations. And we just got to know each other over time. And Anthony's quartet that he was using at that time, which began with players Barry Altschul and also Dave Holland and Kenny Wheeler, and all these various formations that were on the early Arista recordings of Braxton that predate my engagement with Braxton. And eventually he had a quartet with Ray Anderson and Marilyn Crispell and Hugh Reagan. There were all these different formations, but the different people whom I knew were all passing through his, playing with him. As I understood it, many of them mentioned me to him. And so one thing led to another, and I found myself invited to join the quartet in 1983. For which I was excited and very grateful for. It was a wonderful experience, and we also quickly discovered that he and I were very musically sympathetic to each other. We understood each other very well right from the start, and that really developed in a very deep way over time. The group began, the formation that started the group was George Lewis, myself, John Lindbergh on bass, and Anthony, and that group toured in 1983. Then eventually George left and Marilyn Crispell replaced him. And then eventually John was replaced by the bassist Mark Dresser. That happened around 1985. And that formation remained fairly constant, with one exception, remained constant until the group ceased to perform, which was in 1994. We did a lot of things. We toured a great deal, and we really developed this quartet music of Anthony's. It became to be inclusive of his entire output of work up to that point. So in other words, this meant that we would be reading music or employing music in different ways in the context of any given concert evening that would show all kinds of different aspects of Anthony's music. We would take bits and pieces of his orchestral music and weave them into the mix, or all different parts of his quartet music from different times. And these things would be, I wouldn't say collaged together, but organized in an interesting way where we had in a modular way, we could say that. And the construction of these elements changed every night and worked in different ways. The quartet is well documented and well as written, quite a bit of has been written about the group. Many people, particularly musicians, refer to the book Forces in Motion by the writer Graham Locke, who traveled with us in England in 1985 and had a firsthand view of the quartet in all of its infinite detail, and did many interviews with Braxton and myself and the rest of the group, and also witnessed all these concerts and became very literate and understanding of the music and how it was put together. And I highly recommend the book to anybody who's curious about Braxton, because I think it gives you a very intimate and well-written and very clear entree into understanding how this music was put together. And it's a fascinating music. The group had a lot of interesting performances towards the end of its existence, and in particularly in 1993, a lot of different things happened. We were, for instance, in Oakland, California for about a week at Yoshi's Jazz Club out there. And then we did one additional performance at Santa Cruz. That additional performance, along with the Oakland performances, were released. Some of this material was released on record, but the entire Santa Cruz performance has been released on Hat Art Records. And now it's in the process of being re-released. This is a very, if you want to dive into Braxton's work and this quartet in particular, I highly recommend that CD. But today, since I'm here and I have access to other things, I thought you listeners would enjoy to have a chance to hear some things that have not yet ever been put out on record from roughly the same period. And what we're going to hear in this case is a recording from, we did four nights at the Knitting Factory in 1993, and it was actually in November of 19. I'm sorry, I'm going to take it back. This is 91, November of 1991, and we're going to hear the first set of those four nights. We'll hear maybe, I don't know, we'll see how far we'll let the tape roll, but I think maybe a good 20 minutes into the performance, because you need to hear how things evolve in a typical quartet set. I chose this example partly because the sopranino solo that opens the performance, it follows the thematic material, is somewhat exceptional, as you will hear. And there's a lot of other interesting things that follow. The quartet, it's one of the things that I'm identified by. when people who are less familiar with me, they'll say the drummer who played with Anthony Braxton. And so it's a big part of my who I am, of course, and I'm grateful for it in every way, shape, and form. But the quartet was a very, very unique and special experience. And I think that we, over time, gained a rather unique sense of understanding between each other. And also, the other thing that's, I think, most important about the way this quartet evolved and developed was the way in which all of us were independently searching a great deal and going more deeply into our individual potentials through our own projects and other things. And what I noticed inside the quartet was that we took Anthony's ideas and his models and collectively, in this case, added our own thoughts and ideas about how we could go further and more deeply into the way in which these constructs were, the kind of possibilities these constructs were offering. And he'll hear in this performance a good example of that. I'm sorry to say that I am, in preparation for this show, I would have to have all of the scores in front of me to tell you exactly which of the catalog pieces are being played. I recognize them all, but I can't remember exactly the right number, so I'm not going to pretend that I do. We begin, I know, at least with one of his so-called quartet books. There are numbers of books that have a number associated with them. For instance, 34 is 34, and there's a letter after it. So 34 has maybe 17, 18 pieces that have letters after them, and that they refer to a period of quartet writing, one particular quartet that he was writing for at the time. And or 40 is another one, and there's different numbers suddenly have all these extra parts to them. And it's because they were like books that happened at a particular time when he was playing with a particular group, and all of that music was part of what we would perform. So we had a giant, I mean, we're literally carrying around New York phone books worth of scores of music, so that we would be, and every night was a completely different navigation and a completely different experience in terms of how the music went together. And the one you're about to hear was no exception. So let's check it out. Set one from November 11th. I have conflicting dates here. Hang on a second. Let me look at one other thing. I have to really be sure about this. No, I have to take back my. It was miswritten on one of my documentation. So in fact, it is 1993, and the Knitting Factory in November 11th, 1993, and we're going to hear the first, more or less, first third of the first set.
Great.
Thank you.